Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Killer Bees have had a morning. Any of us. I've had a rough morning. Probably the roughest. Blankers has had a rough morning. Brendan's had a rough morning. Do you care to tell our listeners what's been going wrong? Like, why is this a bad morning for you guys? Because I don't think y'all are going to top mine.
Well, right off the rip this morning, I get a nice bill.
Nice bill?
Nice bill. Couple $1,000s.
You have to pay this bill.
A bill? What, on the internet? You just saw it on, like,
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. It was medical stuff. So I spent my morning dealing with medical people, right?
Did you know how much it was going to cost before they sent it to you?
And it was going
to
be a lot.
Yeah.
It was more than I thought.
See, I went through that same feeling after we had our baby, after Brandon baby came into the world and came into existence. And I knew we were getting it like a bill. I remember when we got the bill, I was like, that's not as bad as I thought. I actually had the opposite of what you went through. This was like a month ago.
Jeremy, since I moved to Houston, I've had just nothing but constant medical things.
Yeah.
And every time it's more than I thought. Every time.
Man, that's pretty rough.
So I spent my morning trying to figure out that stuff. And then, you know what? At least, like, I get to take a nice hot shower in the morning, kind of wake up a little bit.
Always feels good.
No hot water.
You didn't have hot water?
Wow. Why?
No hot water.
On a day when it's 40 degrees in the city of Houston?
I thought you got a real apartment complex.
There's probably a case to be made my current apartment is worse than my last apartment.
Really? Oh, so you upgraded. That's nice.
Well, I got a much better location.
He's moving, Jeremy. It might take a week.
Yeah, he's not moving on up. He's just moving laterally.
I got a much better location, so at least I got that going for me. But, no hot water this morning. So honestly, I never realized how much I appreciate a shower in the morning until this morning.
Little things you take for granted. Now, that's a pretty rough morning. I'll grant you that. You get hit with a medical bill that maybe is a little higher than you thought. Don't have warm water on a cool day in the city of Houston. What about you, Blankers? How was your morning so rough?
Well, my wife's new schedule started this week.
Yeah. Congratulations, sir.
Yes. And she was promoted, much to the chagrin of others, that other stations that might like to talk petty. We can get into that as well, which is part of my rough week, part of the leading up to the morning. But the schedule has changed, but her internal clock has not. So even though she can sleep till 7 a.m., she got up at 1.
Oh, no.
Then got up at 2.
Did she get you up?
Oh, but she makes noise. I mean, she blows her nose and it sounds like a horn going off in the parking lot. And then you know, she thinks she's doing me a solid by shutting the doors to the bathroom. But then between, like, the nose blowing and, like, the electric toothbrush and everything, I'm like, yeah, no. So then she decides to go out in the living room, watch TV for a little bit, but then decides it's better if she goes upstairs to work out. And it just so happens that the workout room is right above our bedroom. So all I hear is the on the bike and the treadmill. And I'm like, yeah, this is not going well for the new schedule where I was supposed to finally get to sleep.
You're sleeping less.
Yeah. So I'm like, and she goes, oh, you know what? She goes, my schedule hasn't kicked in for me yet internally. I was up since 1. I go, oh, yeah, I know, because I was too. So that was not a great way to start the day.
I think both of those things are pretty rough. I think those are rough mornings. Brendan getting slapped with a medical bill that's a little bit more expensive than he thought. Not having warm water on a cool day to take a shower. Not getting sleep. We know that we all need our sleep. Pretty rough. I think y'all's fells in comparison to the morning that I had. I got blocked by Larry the GM on Twitter today. And look, I understand sleep's important. I understand finances are important. There's nothing of higher stature than being followed by Larry the GM. And if you're not familiar with Larry the GM, he thinks he's the general manager of the Astros, and he thinks he's the second coming of Jeff Luhnow. He blocked me on Twitter today. I put a tweet out there saying, what has Jim Crane done as an owner for the Houston Astros for us not to believe in him? And he said, well, he nixed the trade of Urquidy and Contreras. He let a bunch of free agents go. And I was like, well, look, the Astros still won the World Series. Wilson Contreras didn't leave in free agency because you still have Jose Urquidy and all the free agent moves. You can make the argument that, you know, it was in the best business decision of the Houston Astros. Larry the GM blocked me. Larry the GM no longer follows me. He has blocked me. I can no longer see content I never would have looked at anyways. Yeah, I'm heartbroken. My morning was shot. I'm glad that the hour has turned past noon. That way I can look forward to a solid afternoon. I'm hoping my afternoon is better than my morning, which, you know, was far worse than your mornings.
I feel like you're catching a lot of blocks on Twitter lately.
I've had more than one because all I know is one.
You know what?
I've seen threats.
We need to expand the segment to be birds and blocks.
Do I have more than one?
We should have birds and blocks because you either get flipped the bird or you get blocked on Twitter.
That's the kind of
days birds that we have blocks. on a daily basis.
Because this is sad day, man.
Jeremy, you bring up a good point though. There are certain people you want to block you that maybe they just don't, and I don't know if they're doing it like a referee that won't throw you out of a game that you want to be tossed from.
Right.
Because you guys know there's a couple people in particular that I've taken more than a few shots at, and no matter what, they will not block me.
Joel, you know there is a block button for you too, right? Like you're also allowed to block them.
I'm anti-block. I don't believe in blocking
people.
I like to
really look and sometimes promote, make fun of stupidity. So I don't block them because I really try to pride myself on I don't really block anybody, as you guys know. But the fact that I think I've safely crossed the line pretty significantly a couple times with a few people, those bloggers that go a little bit too much on the Kool-Aid side, and no matter what, I can't get blocked.
You guys just got to appreciate peace and quiet a little bit more.
I only block people on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN.
Yes, you do that. You guys have taught me that is a hell of a good thing to do.
I don't do it on Twitter, though. The reason I don't do it on Twitter is because I feel like the people get satisfaction whenever you block them. Like Day One Donna says, just mute them. That's my play. Like I mute people on Twitter. I don't block people on Twitter. Now, I do block people on twitch.tv/ESPN975. But it's only for a week. I usually reset it every Monday. So I give you a few days, and then I have a weekend to cool down, chill out a little bit, relax. And then I unblock everybody on Monday, and then they're usually by Monday at about 12:30. That list is already full again.
Well, I mean, that's one way of handling it. You could do it the alternative way, which is the pattern of some people on Twitch, which is you bash the hell out of someone. You go at them for no reason and relentlessly stick with it. And then wait a while and then hope to meet them in person so that you can buy them a beer and give them a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a pretty solid process, too.
I don't mind buying somebody. I'd rather have somebody buy me a beer.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But cool with that. One more thing on Larry the GM and why I've had such a rough morning, which far more rougher than you guys. He DM'd me. He told me to go to hell. He told me to go to hell because I disagreed with his Astros opinion. He slid into my DMs, Larry the GM, which if anybody was going to slide in my DMs, I'm glad it was Larry the GM. He told me to go to hell.
I mean, that's not very nice.
No, it's not very nice at all.
I think if you had name-called him or done
something. I didn't.
That's what I'm saying. If you had name-called him, it might justify some kind of retaliatory action. But it doesn't sound like you did anything to justify what you received.
Yeah, I don't deserve to go to hell, Larry. That was not very nice. Caleb says, well, Brendan, he's talking to you. Why are you worried about a medical bill? Just throw it away. Pretend like you never got it.
Yeah, I wish that I felt comfortable doing that. Sometimes it feels like that's the easier way to go.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that yet.
I have one that I need to pay, too, that I haven't paid in a while. I've been putting it off. It's not very big. It's just I've been lazy more than anything else. But I need to take care of it. We've had bad mornings. Who's had the worst morning? 713-780-ESPN. There's no doubt it's mine. 713-780-3776. I'm not sure how I'm ever going to go on without being followed by Larry the GM.
You know, I went to Facebook this weekend because the other thing that I can't stand besides having a bad morning because it kind of carried over was I don't like it either when people that don't know situations decide to talk on it anyway and hope for the worst. And like Lisa, you know, as you guys know, that schedule was hellacious, right? That morning schedule. And she went to for those of you that don't know or those of you that have asked recently, that she got a different schedule and it started yesterday. And basically, they got a new general manager. She went to him and said, you know what, Christine Noel's leaving. The morning schedule's killing me. I don't sleep. I have a family. I don't see my kids enough. And he was gracious enough to promote her to that position. Well, there were people at other TV stations that decided that they didn't really know the people they were talking to too well, going, hey, did you hear Lisa got demoted? God, how's she handling that? And I just decided to take matters into my own hands for my people on Facebook that are all friends of mine that a lot of them work in the industry and say, if you don't know, you don't take the time to ask, but yet you decide that you should speak on it anyway and you should start spreading BS about the fact that she got demoted. Mm-hmm. What does that say about you?
Yeah, people like to gossip. People like to gossip. Usually matters very little, right?
Yeah, I mean, it says more about them than it says about her. But at the same time, you know, I want to just like to take Barry Warner texted me last night, of course, odd hour, like 9 p.m. I'm watching the game and he says,
hey. He texted you right off the top of his bald head?
Yes.
Wow.
And he said, hey, great picture of the family. I go, what are you, like stalking my Facebook? And he goes, no, Chronicle. I go, what? He goes, yeah, great picture, Cron. I go, I don't get the newspaper. I'm sure you do, but I don't. He goes, no, it's the electronic version. So I went on there, and it was a picture. They did a story on all our dogs and our family like a couple years ago. That. Well, yeah, so they had that picture, and in real big letters, it says, Lisa Hernandez promoted. I thought, you know what? I should copy and paste that and send it to her who likes to run her mouth at another station, but we'll leave it there.
You know what I learned a long time from the great, I guess, prophecy known as J.J. Watt? He always says, don't worry about the opinion of a sheep. If you see yourself as a lion, don't worry about the opinion of a sheep. Hmm. That's, I mean, just words to live by from the great J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you don't want to be a sheep from the great J.J. Watt. Yeah. So who had the worst morning? I think there's no doubt that it's Branham because he's been blocked by Larry, the GM. He told me to go to hell. 713-780-ESPN.
I know the way that block affects you. I'll let you have this one.
I'm heartbroken, man. I really am. I don't know how I'm going to exist for the rest of the week. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. So Jeff Passan asterisk, that's what we like to call him. He's up to his old tricks. He's trying to drag Houston Astros owner Jim Crane. There's some decent stuff in this article from Jim Crane that he talked about, you know, the dynamic of the Houston Astros front office. We got to get to what Passan had to say. And really this dynamic that the Houston Astros are bringing into the front office where it looks like Jim Crane is going to be the GM of the Houston Astros. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So Larry the GM told me to go to hell. If he was a colleague of mine, I'd be calling HR. When if I was calling HR, I'd be calling HR&P. They handle our HR here, human resources and payroll, and I know that they would take care of it. The Cougar, owned by my colleague, they're members of the Cougar 100, the distinguished Cougar 100 for the eighth year in a row. You've seen the HR&P signage. You've been to Fertitta. You've been to TDECU. You've been to the ballpark over there as well. You've seen the HR&P signage. You've seen their building off the Beltway with the beautiful U of H flag hanging outside of it. But where they can really help you, look, if you're a business owner, you need to know about HR&P. They can help in a ton of areas that will make it easier for you. They'll make life easy for you, and you can worry about growing your business. HR compliance, they can help there. Benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. HR&P can help in any or all of those facets. There's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small the job is. Doesn't matter how big the job is. HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you need, what your business needs to help you save time and money. If you have a problem or an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help. They also do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best technology. You'll love that. Don't have to worry about that. But you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You won't be talking to a stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows your business needs. Look, I'm an employee of an employer who uses HR&P and could not be happier with them. Anytime I have a question, quick to respond, easy to understand. Give them a call right now, 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
There is a lot to get to with the Houston Astros owner Jim Crane. Jeff Passan asterisk has a story out on the new dynamics of the Houston Astros front office, a little bit of a behind-the-scenes peek about how it's been going in the front office with Jim Crane. I think James Click, the people that James Click employed that are still with the organization, are the ones telling this to Jeff Passan because it's pretty slanted, at least in my opinion. And we'll get to some of the content of what Passan says about this new front office dynamic about the Houston Astros in a second, because there's a lot of really good stuff here that we kind of need to go item by item. But I think that the all-encompassing question when it comes to Jim Crane, because look, It is odd, right? The Astros over the last they're in this golden era. I think that they're a dynasty dating back since 2017. Two World Series titles. You've been to four. You've been to six straight ALCSs. 100-win seasons. They've been the best team in baseball for over half a decade. But it's been kind of this weird ride. The 2019. We know what happened there. I think the Astros were doing what everybody else was doing, but it did lead to the firing of your GM, who built this whole thing, and the firing of your manager at A.J. Hinch. You bring in Dusty Baker to right the ship, and he's done a tremendous job doing that. You bring in James Click to oversee the roster. I think he did a really good job of that as well. It culminated in another World Series victory as well. And since then, he's gone. Click is gone. Crane doesn't want to work with Click, and more is coming out about like why they clashed, why they collided. James Click has even talked about it himself. Part of the reason he's no longer here, because he started to get a little loose-lipped and ran his mouth a little bit, and Jim Crane didn't like that very much. So I think that the biggest question here, the all-encompassing question, and we'll dive into it as long as you guys want to, 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Are you worried about the direction Jim Crane is taking the Astros?
So far, no, but I have concerns, okay? I have concerns about the fact that we've always talked about the best case scenario for a front office and a coach, and the way any professional team is constructed is to have a happy medium between the eye test and analytics. Well, the only thing that concerned me about the article, if it's true that Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, and baseball guys are what Crane wants, and he's going to go away from an analytical type approach, which has had nothing but success for this franchise over the last, you know, getting 6+ years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only concern I have. Jim Crane is the owner. He is entitled to do whatever the hell he wants to do. And short of doing something like a Donald Sterling or the guy with the Carolina Panthers back...
Dave Tepper.
No, before Tepper. Oh. The guy that got
I don't know that guy.
Forced out. He had to sell too. And Snyder, you know, these type of guys. Short of doing something like that, they have enough money, more money than anyone that we can imagine knowing and hanging out with, to do whatever the hell they want. We may not like it. We may not agree with it. We may know it's wrong from the start, but they're going to do what they're going to do. So I worked with, pretty closely with an owner that basically did whatever he wanted to do and didn't care if you liked it or not. There were certain times and certain situations, and thankfully not too many of them, but still plenty enough to where you dealt with them, that you just have to sometimes accept, hey, he owns the team. He can do whatever he wants. To me, this is Passan, who can't bitch anymore about the cheating scandal of 17 and now has to admit, which was very painful, I'm sure, for him in the article, that they really are just this good and have been on this kind of run because it's a really good organization. But now, right after that, he has something else that he can go jab at because he just wants to crap all over this organization. And that's what annoys me the most.
Yeah, I want to get to the Passan side of it in a bit, but I want to start about like the front office structure. Are you worried about the direction Crane has taken the Astros? Because I think there are valid points and valid questions and valid concerns. I think you mentioned quite a few of them. I don't love the idea that Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson are like having maybe as much influence now. How much influence they're having, I think, is very, very vague. Like, it mentions that Reggie Jackson got upset with somebody and yelled. Like, that has zero to do with roster construction, has zero to do with any sort of roster move from major leagues all the way down to rookie ball. It said that Jeff Bagwell had voiced some, like, cynicism about the way the Astros were handling player development. That could literally mean anything. That can mean that he wants his infielders to take 14 ground balls instead of 12. It's vague. Like, that tells me nothing.
It could be in a hitting session that they're no longer hitting off a tee when he felt like it was an effective tool.
It's not saying that Jeff Bagwell wants to totally reconfigure how the Astros have been handling their minor league pipeline that has been the most instrumental thing that has led to the golden era. We don't know. It could be anything from big. It could be anything from small. The very vague quote that Bagwell like voiced some displeasure about the way things were being run can literally mean anything. So I don't know how to take that. The thing that you mentioned about he wants more of like this baseball guy dynamic. I refuse to believe that, to be quite honest with you. Jim Crane has hired two general managers in his lifetime as the Houston Astros owner. Both of them have been incredibly analytical. Mm-hmm. He loved Jeff Luhnow, who was incredibly analytical. And whenever he felt that he was forced to fire Jeff Luhnow, he hired a guy from Tampa Bay who's known for being more analytical than the Oakland A's. So Jim Crane has showed you twice that he's been willing to hire analytical guys. Also, if you go look at the names that have been rumored or reported to maybe the Astros would have interest in these guys, guys as general managers. David Stearns is one of them. Of course, he's not coming this year. I think the Astros are ultimately going to wait a year to hire a GM, and it's eventually going to be David Stearns. He is to the Astros what Nick Caserio was to Cal McNair and the Texans. David Stearns is incredibly analytical. The other one, Sig Meidel, who was a former NASA engineer that used to be a professional blackjack player. He is a heavy analytical dude. And the one non-analytical guy is Brad Ausmus. Like, Brad Ausmus has been mentioned. I don't think he's going to be a GM. I think he could eventually work in the front office, but not as the head honcho. But even Brad Ausmus, that's kind of a combination of the old school, but has also been a guy who's been able to deep dive into the analytics of the
his
game.
His time working in the front office was spent so that he could hone his skills analytically that he had already brought to the table because he knew that was an important part of baseball. I don't disagree with you. The thing that the concerns where I have is you go, we know Dusty's real old school, and we know Reggie Jackson's real old school.
Sure.
But with Bagwell, I love listening to him on the telecast the once a week or once every couple of weeks that he does it. You know, you obviously know he still follows the game. But to me, the question would be, because I don't hear any analytical approach to what he brings to the table.
He kind of spats in the face of analytics.
Yeah. But he knows the game. He can see talent. He knows a lot of things like that. But the other thing is his dedication. He has so much money and so many things going with the family and kids and everything else. It's the same reason why he had a short stint as a hitting coach where he had some really good effects on some players for a short period of time. And then he just basically said, yeah, I can't, I'm not cracked up for doing this every single day all the time.
Yeah, I don't think that the energy was there for that.
I don't like the fact that, I don't think it'll happen with Bagwell being a general manager type either. He can be the number one voice in Crane's ear that brings more true baseball experience to the table. That's one thing. And he can voice the kinds of comments that you read in the article that you mentioned. That's all fine and dandy. But there's no way I'm going to believe that Jeff Bagwell wants to sign up for the everyday, all-day general manager job, especially with how many analytical things have to be involved, including salary balance and the way you make contracts up.
Bagwell's not cut out for that. Bagwell's not. I mean, I don't mind that Bagwell is the sounding board for Jim Crane, but Jeff Bagwell should not be making organizational big picture decisions. And I don't think he is.
See,
I really don't.
And the thing with the other thing that you mentioned, look, I don't think it's a bad thing when I say that there's a balance between analytics and eye test.
I like that.
I like it a lot. And I think that's the best. You know, Mikhail and I used to talk about it all the time because he wasn't analytical like Daryl, but he also knew that there was value in it. And he thought that, you know, again, that if you could get both sides of the table. So when I read that Crane brought Reggie and Bagwell into their baseball, you know, baseball management meeting about baseball operations and the player development, there's nothing wrong with that from the standpoint of getting some guys that have been there and done that to also provide their input so that the organization gets both sides of it. I got no problem with that.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Are you worried about the direction that Jim Crane is taking the Astros? Let's go out to the HRP listener line for the first time this afternoon. Get Gary in here. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I want to say I'm very concerned. I mean, simply because, number one, I think the Reggie Jackson thing has always been weird to me. It just seems weird to me on his face, but whatever. Excuse my English, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, it worries me because we have basically one of the most successful runs in almost baseball history, unless we count like the 1920 Yankees.
Sure.
And whatever we've been doing, let's continue to do it. I mean, this is how empires fall, right? You know, it's kind of giving me some Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones type of personality conflict. Like, get over it. Like, whatever's happening is working. I really would like the owner to stay out of baseball operations, and I don't feel like that was always the case in the past, which he's the owner, so of course he'll have some input. But I'm worried that this is the type of thing when people get kind of high off their own success. You want to bring in a Reggie Jackson and a Jeff Bagwell, and you're running off James Click. To me, like, this could be the beginning of the end if Jim Crane is going to try to function as like a front office guy. So
appreciate the call, Gary. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. Is this the beginning of the end? What about the ain't broke, don't fix it logic? Let's hit that when we return. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about Vivia. Again, look, you might have some things going on at your house. You're thinking about doing some renovations. Maybe you're cleaning out the garage or the attic. Maybe you just, you know, you have a commercial business and you do all the right work in terms of renovations and upgrades like Texas Custom Patios, but you need someone to take away all the excess and the waste and do the things that sometimes people forget to do. That's why you go to Vivia. GoVivia.com will take care of all of it for you because they have 10-foot and 15-foot rollaway dumpsters that you can get right away. And basically, they will drop it off and take it away the same day and take care of the trash and take it out so you don't have to. It's a problem solved, and it's fantastic, and they've been doing it for years. They can do it for you like they've done for so many Houstonians. It looks good in your driveway. It fits perfectly. The HOA's not going to complain. There's curb appeal even while the work's being done, and once you're done, so are they. They come back, pick up the dumpster. They go their way, you go yours, and you know you did everything the right way. It's a fantastic process. I encourage you to check them out. It's GOVAVIA.com. It's GoVivia.com. We use them at the ESPN 97.5 golf tournament. Could not be happier. Commercial, like I said, commercial businesses use them all the time for doing their upgrades and renovations. You should check them out the next time you need to take the trash out. Just GoVivia.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Are you worried about the direction Jim Crane is taking the Astros? He's relieved James Click of his duties, as we know. The Jeff Passan asterisk story today on Jim Crane, which paints him in a bad light. We'll get to some of the meat of the story in a little bit, but want to get to some of Gary's points of the beginning of the end. Because, look, every reign comes to an end, right? Every dynasty and power eventually crumbles, whether it's sports, whether it's just the history of the world. Many people, like when I put this on Twitter today, a lot of people said that this reminds them of Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson. The Cowboys were rolling, America's team. They were a dynasty, and then they came. You know, it took them. It was more of a steady decline than a crash and burn for the Cowboys.
I blocked
of course,
you tweeted that.
That's fine. I don't care about your opinion.
All right,
anyway, but Gary says like he gets the feel it's the beginning of the end, and like I believe overall that Jim Crane deserves the benefit of the doubt. What he has done as the owner for the Astros, like he has completely turned around what was once kind of a sad organization. When Drayton McClain sold the team, they were not in a good state. The roster was very mediocre. The minor league pipeline was like a ghost town because Drayton McClain didn't want to spend any money on it. Eventually, they didn't have television for most of the city. No one was going to the ballparks. It was a very, very sad state. Jim Crane, as the owner of the organization, turned it from that being the laughingstock of Major League Baseball, the most embarrassing organization in all of Major League Baseball, a sport that contains the Rays at the time, the Marlins at the time, the Pirates. I mean, we can go on and on with some bad baseball organizations, and the Astros were at the very bottom. He has them at the top now. He has them all the way at the cream of the crop in Major League Baseball. So the beginning of the end is an interesting like angle from Gary's point of view. Because, look, the end has to come at some point. Is this the beginning of the end? I think a lot of the I hesitate to say concerns because they don't really concern me, but I think it's fair to call them questions. And Gary brings up like the Jerry Jones aspect. Yesterday I called him George Steinbrenner. So like that's not that far apart. Where I think that they're different, though, is I don't really feel that Jim Crane wants to be the general manager of the Houston Astros. I believe he just didn't think James Click was very good. He didn't trust James Click like he trusted Jeff Luno, so he felt he had to nix trades. He felt he had to get the input of a Reggie Jackson, Jeff Bagwell. I don't believe that Jim Crane's going to put much power in the hands of Reggie Jackson and Jeff Bagwell. I think eventually Jim Crane's going to have a general manager in here that's analytical, one that he can trust, and one that he doesn't have to meddle in very often.
Here's where I'm at, Jeremy. Look, I hear what you're saying, but here's the thing. He doesn't want to be the general manager. He just wants to do what he has enough money to be able to do, which is get involved whenever he feels necessary and fit. I don't think he necessarily thought that Click was bad. I just feel like there was a personality conflict. And because of it, some guys don't like the way employees rub them the wrong way, and they make a decision because of that as well. I think he liked the fact, and in Passan's article, he kind of highlights it as well, that Crane can sometimes, in business meetings that I've talked to people that have been in them, he runs the meeting, he is in clear command, he is clear-cut in his decisions, and he just likes guys that are, that kind of type A personality. Click doesn't seem to be that kind of guy. Luno was that kind of guy, maybe too much so, because as we've also heard, his ego and his cockiness and his arrogance rubbed a lot of people in baseball the wrong way. But Crane liked that because a lot of people say the same things about Jim Crane when it comes to business dealings. So the fact that he got a guy that was very good at his job from an analytical perspective, but didn't do it the kind of way and communicate with him the kind of way that Crane is used to top-ranking officials communicating with him and being that kind of in-control type guy, he made a change. The thing that scares me, the only thing that can scare me, because I'm not on board with passing, and I'm not on board with people that are overly concerned with some of the things they've brought up. The thing that concerns me is exactly what we talked about Friday when you were out, but you and I talked about it subsequently on Monday a little bit too. I worry about the fact that in the interim, until we get a Stearns or whoever the next guy is going to be, that Jim Crane, the only way he could screw this thing up is doing what he did with Montero. He brought him back, but he brought him back at such a huge raise, the market would have told you that that was way too high. The fact that whether you wanted to keep him or not, you and I had multiple conversations about the fact, look, we love what he did for the Astros. Someone's going to overpay him. We're not mad at him, but it doesn't really seem to make sense with what the money need, with how much importance money will have with all the guys you want to try and get, bring in, sign, re-sign, and how it affects your team going forward. He got that deal. It's done. There's nothing you can do about it. But if he keeps making deals like that, that's the only thing that can handcuff this franchise in the short term as it continues to stay successful. If he overspends where he doesn't need to because he just feels like I can do whatever I want and this is what I want to pay him.
So if they got Rizzo $100 million for 4 years, you would be upset with that?
That's an overpay.
So would you be upset with it?
I mean, you know I like Rizzo and I would really like him in the lineup, but I don't know at what price. I mean, that's the thing. Because then you wonder, the question would be, well, what does Verlander factor in? Are you going to pay Verlander 45? I understand it's his money. If he's willing to pay all the taxes and things like that too, yeah, then that's cool. I just wonder about the sensibility in terms of trying to make it all work while this team keeps winning.
See, this is where I think that the fallout between Crane and Click existed, to be honest with you, what you just said. And what the way you just said that, I think, is very James Clicky, to be honest with you. Whereas, like, yeah, $11.5 million is probably $3 million more than average annual value. So it's like, okay, now I'm overpaying for a reliever. We still think he's going to be good, but now it's an overpay. So it changes the whole ratio of dollar versus production, which a lot of analytical people have that mindset. James Click has that mindset.
Click's the dollars have to make sense.
Right. Guy. I mean, you need to get a certain amount of value for the dollar that you're spending. You operate it kind of like a salary cap league, even though Major League Baseball is not a salary cap league, although we've seen from Jim Crane that he doesn't love to go above the luxury tax, right? He's only done it once in the history of his ownership with the Houston Astros. I think where Jim Crane's at, though, and that side of the argument is he doesn't mind overspending a few million dollars. He's willing to give a $3 million raise every, you know, for an average annual value for Rafael Montero, who is a big piece, a key cog in a World Series team. So Crane's like, I don't really care if I'm overspending by a few million if I can guarantee I get a player that I want. Where it can be an issue is what you just described, right? Where it becomes like it hamstrings you from a payroll perspective to now where if you're striking deals with Rafael Montero for more than he's like would have gotten on the open market, is it costing you down the road? My hesitation and what I was talking about yesterday is if it doesn't cost you down the road, who cares if he's giving a $3 million raise to a relief pitcher that he likes? It does not matter. If it doesn't restrict you from doing other things, I don't care how Jim Crane's spending his money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. As long as it doesn't restrict you. But if you keep making deals like this, at some point, it is going to restrict you.
Never restricted
you.
George Steinbrenner. Like, is Jim Crane
but
turning
you know
into George Steinbrenner?
But you know the rules of baseball changed quite a bit since George Steinbrenner was running the Yankees.
Sure, the luxury tax matters now, and you have to spend more money. You get taxed for more money that you spend. But Crane could be, I mean, look, everything that we've read the last few days about Jim Crane was that he was begging James Click to spend his money, and James Click refused to spend his money, which is a crazy thought for a GM to not spend an owner's money that's trying to get you to spend his money. It makes no sense to me.
So, again, I don't have any reason to doubt Jim Crane making his decisions, running his team his way.
Sure.
But I'm saying the one thing that could be a concern of mine if it keeps happening is if you see a continuous track record of overpay.
Agree. Like, agree with you there. I don't think the Rafael Montero is like so long term that it's really going to, like, even if Rafael Montero turns into the old Rafael Montero where all of a sudden he has a 4.25 ERA every single year, it's a short term deal. Is it higher than the average annual value you would have gotten in free agency? Maybe by a couple million, maybe up to 3 million, but you get out of it in 3 years.
This is Will went to the Nationals after
Harris.
Will Harris. This is a Will Harris type deal, like, but with less resume coming in, right? You're going to overpay a reliever that's had some success that you want. That another, in this case, you're keeping your own. In their case, we want what they had and how good he was. He went to Washington and he crapped the bed. He, you know, injuries and otherwise, he never even was close. That's what worries me again on this Montero deal. If you're talking about a reliever that year after year has put up solid numbers and, you know, done the kind of things to be dominant, then I'm more on board to give him a little bit more and say, come play with us. We're a winning team. We need you. You want us, we'll pay you. But if it's a Montero that had a career year, as you labeled it very, very accurately yesterday, it concerns me even more because as much as he found it and really maximized it last year, is he going to be able to maintain it and maintain it for the majority of that contract?
Well, I think it's when you depend kind of on your scouts and what your baseball people are telling you. Like, I think do you believe Rafael Montero is going to be good for the next 3 years? If they tell you yes, and you can guarantee that a dude is here that has been a key cog for a World Series team, why wouldn't you do it? I also don't like, what is, like, it goes back to what we were saying yesterday, the whole, like, if it restricts you from doing other things, if you can't sign a first baseman because you signed Rafael Montero, that is not good. If you can't sign a left field DH because you signed Rafael Montero, then that is not good. But everything we're seeing that the Astros are still very active in free agency, and it doesn't seem that Rafael Montero contract is going to restrict them from acquiring two bats. If they still get two bats in here, two starting like caliber bats, first base, left field DH, would you still be saying the same thing about Rafael Montero's contract?
It still would concern me because we haven't talked about Verlander yet.
See, but that's kind of like, I don't mind if Verlander leaves.
I don't either now because of what I saw in the playoffs. But I know what he did in the regular season, and I know you don't have the position you had in the playoffs without Justin Verlander's regular season. But I also know that what we saw in the playoffs was he wasn't very good, and the guys that were around him were, and especially Christian Javier, who showed he's ready for prime time, and he's ready to be that every day, you know, every fifth day, top of your rotation starting pitcher. That gives you even more ability to take a deep breath and go, thanks for the memories. We can move on. You can move on. You get your money. We get to put a whole bunch of other players in this lineup to where we consistently keep winning. And I'm fine with it too. So, but that's the elephant that's still sitting in the room because you know he's Crane's buddy. You know that Crane makes the deals with him personally. And you wonder, hey, you're right. If they add the two bats, whether Verlander's in the equation or not, however he handles them, then I would feel a lot better about the Montero contract, though I still don't understand it because a business guy, for whatever
good.
It is.
That's why, because he's good. He's good. He had a really good year.
But to give him three at that money, it concerns me.
I mean, Crane likes him. Evidently. He thinks he's really good. He had a really good year. Your concern is valid. Like, he's had one good year in his big league career, but he was also a converted starter, so we saw what he became. If Rafael Montero pitches the way, and this is a big if, granted, but if he pitches the way he did the next three seasons like he did last year, $11.5 million is pretty fair value. So, like, I think it's being too critical for a guy who's showing that he wants to spend money. Like, he is showing that he wants to spend money. I don't think it's going to restrict the Astros from signing other players. I think it does the opposite, actually.
I've never been too critical. I've never been accused of it, and I don't want to start now.
I want to get to Gary's point, too, about the ain't broke, don't fix it part. Because I disagree wholeheartedly with that sort of logic, not only in sports, but just like the business world altogether. And I want to get into some of the specific nuggets that Jeff Passan asterisk put in his story that paints Jim Crane in a negative light. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Are you concerned with where the Astros are going under the direction of Jim Crane? I find this conversation to be kind of hilarious, to be honest with you. I know the Jeff Passan story today kind of has maybe a little bit of fear in people's hearts. 6-0-3-0.
That's what Joel Osteen Jr. wanted. He likes to mix it up to get that kind
and
of reaction.
Here's my all-encompassing opinion about Jeff Passan and this whole Jim Crane thing, too. Jeff Passan wants to protect the industry. Jeff Passan thinks he's a part of the industry. And by baseball industry, I mean like the scribes, the writers, the players, probably the agents, maybe even the managers. And whenever something is done that impacts the industry in a negative way, Passan feels like he needs to defend the industry. Jeff Luhnow was hated amongst the energy because of his arrogance, his cockiness, the fact that he was really good, the Taubman situation with Roberto Osuna, and then because the Astros were doing something everybody else did, they were able to prey in on Luhnow because they couldn't stand him. Jim Crane is the owner of the Astros, who they still can't stand the Astros, and they hate that they're very good. But now you have another opportunity to try to paint the Astros in a negative light, and at the same time protecting the industry. James Click is an industry guy, well-respected, coming from Tampa Bay, was there forever. He's a GM that gets along with the industry. So whenever that dude who is part of the industry gets disrespected, one-year deal is disrespectful. I'll concede that. But it's Jim Crane's team. He feels like he can do better. Jeff Passan, asterisk, feels like he now has to take care of the industry, in this case, James Click, and that's why he's dragging Jim Crane today.
Let's also not short sell the fact that because it's the Houston Astros, there's a little bit more.
Well, I said that.
Yeah, but there's more passion in Passan, right? I mean, he's the Lone Ranger. He's the non badge carrying, law abiding writer that gets to call everything and be the judge and jury that the general public needs. And you know, that's the thing that annoys me the most. Like seeing him out on the field with his smiles, you know, yucking around like Joel Osteen in a sermon, like looking for everybody to kind of high-five him and be around him. And the guys that knew stayed the hell away from him. Like, dude, you're not one of us. You're one of them. And you're so far down the line that you're annoying. Yeah. And that's, I think, it's a column of annoyance. He likes to do this to get under the Astros' skin, to take shots at the Astros, and be the voice that, like you said, all of baseball fans across America need.
Part of why I find this to be very funny, too, is because this dude is quite honestly the best sports owner this city has ever seen.
You're right.
And is the most decorated sports owner this city has ever seen. And people in this city are concerned, like all of a sudden think that he's going to turn into Jerry Jones, where he's going to make every roster decision. No, he just didn't like James Click. He's going to go find a GM that he really likes. It might take a year, but he's going to go find a GM that he really likes. People are like kind of like getting upset. I've seen some people on Twitter like say, oh, he's a terrible person. He's mean. He's not nice. He's cutthroat. He runs his business with an iron fist. Go buy Texan season tickets then. Go enjoy Cool Cat Cal McNair, who's a cool cat and will make you some hot dogs and hamburgers and field a team that's lucky to win four wins. Like, I want an owner who rules with an iron fist. I want an owner that strives to get better even whenever they just won a World Series, that thinks he can upgrade at a GM position and make a bold decision that is unpopular and hasn't been done since the 1940s by replacing a GM after they won the World Series. I want a GM that's courageous, that has the bravado to do it. To Gary's point, when he called us earlier, 713-780-3776, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't believe in that sort of logic. And I know that sounds like, wow, well, what are you talking about? The example I would use here is Blockbuster. There was once upon a time when Blockbuster was top of the market in the rental game, right? They had an opportunity to buy Netflix and they didn't. And all what happened? Everybody went streaming. Everybody went digital. How many Blockbusters are around now in the world? Blockbuster was at the peak. Blockbuster was the very best.
In Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, and I think there's a sitcom about it now. Blockbuster was once at the top of its game. And the reason that Blockbuster failed, and there's only one now currently in existence, is because they didn't evolve. They had the mantra, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We're in the rental game, VHS, DVD, it ain't going anywhere. We're top of the game, baby. We're not going to evolve. Jim Crane wants the Astros to evolve so they can continue this level of success they've been on.
And I think that you're right, but I think that that's the key, to evolve, to keep moving forward. And part of moving forward, I think, in a lot of people's minds is a more modernized baseball of analytics. And so the fear is, when you read the column, that they're going to dissolve by devolving instead of evolving, because they're going to go back to all old school baseball types and old mind, old school, I'll spend whatever I want, however I want, George Steinbrenner-esque back in the 70s kind of thinking, and that's not going to work with everybody else playing analytics and Moneyball.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the concern can come from, is the fact that as long as he's moving forward, he'll get another analytical guy, and those are the guys that are going to make to avoid what I was saying, where I don't want multiple deals where I feel like they grossly overpaid, and that starts to hamstring you.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But other than that, I don't have any reason to doubt what Jim Crane has done and what he continues to do for this franchise.
Yep.
It's way better than Drayton.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. I mean, better than anybody I think the city's ever seen. And your points about the inflated contracts are a fair point. If it influences other contracts in the way to build a roster, the money you want to spend in player development, the money you want to spend in international signing, if it influences that stuff, your point's valid. It's a very valid concern. I just don't believe it's going to, based on what we've read from Jim Crane. I think Jim Crane's ready to spend money, and I think a big part of the reason that he got rid of James Click was because Click was refusing to spend the money that Jim Crane was telling him to spend.
I'm wondering, too, Jeremy, when I read the article, and you see at a certain point when Passan points out that the Astros and James Click declined to take part in it, I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of an agreement at the end of the agreement with James Click, because you knew, as we mentioned, there are no jobs open where he can just jump to another position right away.
Yeah.
That they said, hey, we're going to do a little letter agreement where we're going to pay you a little extra if you agree to not sling mud after the fact to protect themselves. The Rockets were notorious for it. They've done it forever and a day. They'll pay you to go away as long as you shut your mouth. They won't pay you if you won't assign a document that says you will not slander them when you leave.
I don't believe it happened in this case. I'm not going to rule it out as like within the realm of possibility. I think that James Click or either James Click people leaked this to Jeff Passan, because it is written with a very much slant of anti Jim Crane, anti the dynamic of the Houston Astros. Some of the stuff that Jeff Passan wrote in this. Furkus, who is now the acting GM, he's like handling all he's the point person for free agent discussions, along with Andrew Ball, one of Click's assistant GMs, Charles Cook, who Crane promoted to assistant GM earlier this week, remain. They are the brain trust. Though multiple people in the organization fear their authority, like Click's, will be usurped, I don't even know how to say the word, by the former players to whom Crane regularly listens. A GM is the boss. Like, yeah, you should fear the authority of the dude who is the acting GM. Like, I don't understand what Passan's saying with this whole point, that people fear Furkus's authority. He's the acting GM. You should fear his authority. He's the boss. He's your superior. Like, this to me seems like a paragraph that's like, oh, yeah, we're going to try to drag the Astros any way we possibly can. He's the acting GM. He's the boss. You got to understand and listen to your boss.
I think it also sounds like they fear that he's going to have authority until he doesn't, and then Crane's going to do what he's going to do. He's entitled to do that as the owner of this team. I think realistically, Jeremy, when I was thinking about this too, reading this article and then trying to figure out how it all takes shape, Ausmus is a logical guy for me that's going to fit somewhere into this equation. Ausmus is very tight with Bagwell if Bagwell truly has Crane's ear. Ausmus is both analytical and an ex-player that understands the eye test. Ausmus is a guy that spent time in front offices learning how to general manager. The ideal scenario for me that I think plays out is somehow, some way, Ausmus gets the title of either general manager or assistant general manager or somewhere where he's there, and Stearns eventually is president of baseball operations. Brad can handle the day-to-day with some help from Stearns. Key decisions are going to be made by the three of them between Ausmus, Stearns, and Crane. And Crane gets the kind of guys that he wants, personality-wise, communication-wise, and kind of swing for the fences guys as well, that he demands in the way he wants his organization run.
I could see that. I think it's a pretty good call. A lot of people like fearing that he could be Jerry Jones, fearing that Crane's going to like make all these decisions. I don't believe that to be true. And then the other part that people, I've seen like one of their valid like concerns and worries is that he's all of a sudden going to ignore player development, that he's going to just totally abandon player development. Look, Jim Crane is a self-made billionaire. He's completely turned around the Astros organization from laughingstock to the very best in, you know, a pretty short window of time since he's owned the team, which is probably, what, 15 years or so? I think roughly around there. So he's done a tremendous job. Self-made billionaires turned around an organization from the worst to the absolute best. He's not going to all of a sudden turn a blind eye on the biggest reason why his team has had so much success in the last 6 years. He's still going to invest in player development. He's still going to invest in international free agency. He just also wants to spend money on his big league team. And like, the last thing I want to really say about James Click, and I know that's probably will forever be a conversation, at least for the remainder of this offseason, the feeling that I got from reading the Passan asterisk story, from reading the Michael Schwab, what he posted about it, and just kind of seeing this whole dynamic play out with what I know about Click, because look, I hesitate to admit this, I've studied the Tampa Bay franchise. I've read the book about the Tampa Bay Rays, and it mentions James Click in it all the time, and James Click handled business in Houston just like Tampa Bay handled business. The reason that Crane did not like Click is he felt that Click was a scared little baby, that he didn't want to spend somebody else's money, that he wasn't aggressive in trades. And what Crane admired about Luno was he wasn't a scared little baby. He would trade five prospects for Bryce Harper, but the Washington National owner declined it. He traded for Gerrit Cole. He traded for Zach Greinke. They were going to pay Bryce Harper $50 million for 1 year. The reason Click is no longer the Astros general manager is because Crane views Click as a scared little baby.
He didn't have big stones, and he also wasn't decisive, right? Because I think that a lot of times when an owner, and I've worked for guys like this, not just owners, but CEOs and otherwise, where when you come into their office, you need to clearly and a lot of times quickly and efficiently lay out what you want to do and tell me why it's the right decision. Then I'll have input. But if you come in like you perceive Click to be, which is going, hey, here's a deal that I've been working on. I'm not sure how you feel about it. Let me see if you're going to like it or not. I'm not sure you're going to like it. Let me do that. As opposed to Luno, that came in and goes, here's a deal where we can swing for the fences. I looked at this. I've talked to them. They want to give us this player. He makes us so much better in the short term. Whether we sign him or long term doesn't matter. The prospects, we got those covered. We've got other guys in the system. Let's do this because we can be better now. Then it's up to Crane to make a quick decision. He likes that. It's the same way he does his business, and he has everything he needs. It seems like Click was more of the passive, I don't want to hurt his feelings. I don't want to get him where he gets fired up and starts yelling bad words at me. I'm just going to kind of do my job, but I don't really like talking to him a whole lot. And owners don't like that.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll switch the conversation up. NFL, we had a interesting game last night. I hesitate to say good game. NFL is heating up. There's some teams not doing so hot that we thought were. There's some teams doing really hot that we didn't think that they would. Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, discusses the goings-on around the NFL at the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, he's the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what that is, you need to check it out, especially if you're a guy that looks in the mirror when you get up in the morning and go, where'd all my hair go? I'm thinning. I'm balding. I don't have any kind of coverage like I used to have across my scalp. It's time for me to shave it or look at those sprays and creams and foams that mask it, but I don't know what I'm going to do next. Now you do. It's called neo-grafting. Doc does it. He does it right here in Houston, and he is awesome. And it is going to get your hair back. And when I say your hair, it's yours. It's not masking the problem. It's solving it. Because genetically, you are always going to have hair on the sides and the back of your head. What he does is take every third or fourth follicle and move those follicles from where you have a ton to where you need more. Maybe it's in the front where your forehead has become an 8 head. Maybe it's in the back where you've got that baboon's butt shining through every day when the sun is on you. Well, he can handle all of those situations and take care of them flawlessly. Suddenly, you've got your hair back. You've got self-confidence. You feel great again. Check it out, because as an ESPN listener, he normally charges $150 just to talk to him about if the procedure's right for you or not. For you as an ESPN listener, it's free. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, 975hair.com, sign up for an appointment. Go in there. Ask all the questions. Find out how much it costs, how the financing works, how long it takes to actually do the procedure, how long the recovery, when do I see the full results? And the big number for me was 95%+ of the follicles moved, stay and grow and are with you for the rest of your life. That's what made the difference for me. That's what got my old hairline back. That's why I did it, and you should too. Check it out. See if it's right for you. Go to 975hair.com.